It's now 1 o'clock. Time for the news read by Ian Skelly.
The Chancellor, George Osborne, has warned that Britain would be on the road to ruin without what he called decisive action aimed at tackling Britain's record budget deficit. He told the BBC that the budget on Tuesday would be for the whole of the Parliament rather than just 1 year. He stressed that the cuts, which he described as tough but fair, could not wait. Mr Osborne also announced that Labour's former Work and Pensions Secretary, John Hutton, will head an independent commission looking at the future of public sector pensions. The former Deputy Prime Minister, John Prescott, suggested that Mr Hutton was a collaborator for accepting the role and questioned whether he had a conscience. 26 people have been killed in the Iraqi capital Baghdad when two car bombs went off in the car park of a bank. Around 50 people were injured. A week ago, 15 people were killed in an attack on the Iraqi Central Bank in Baghdad. President Obama's chief of staff has criticised the chief executive of BP, Tony Hayward, for spending a day sailing with his son. Rahm Emanuel described the day off as the latest in a long line of PR gaffes. Oil continues to leak from a well in the Gulf of Mexico. The people of Poland are electing a successor to President Lech Kaczynski, who died in an air crash in Russia, which killed many of Poland's political and military leaders in April. There are 10 candidates, including Mr Kaczynski's twin brother, Jarosław. The England defender John Terry insists that the whole team is behind the manager, Fabio Capello, and will give its all for the decisive World Cup group match against Slovenia next Wednesday. He told journalists in Rustenburg that the team would be holding a meeting with Capello to help clear the air. He admitted he'd not enjoyed the tournament so far. And the weather, fairly cloudy this afternoon with occasional rain for both northern Scotland and southeast England. The rest of the country should be dry and bright with lengthy sunny spells. The best of these will be in the west, and it'll feel warmer too as the chilly wind eases. And that's the BBC News and the weather. The time now is 2 minutes past one.
And it was read by Ian Skelly. Well, time now on Radio 3 to join Lucy Skeeping for the Early Music Show.
Welcome to the Early Music Show. That was the prelude from a suite in D major by Carl Friedrich Abel, and it was performed by the musician who's my guest today, the internationally acclaimed player of the viola da gamba, Paolo Pandolfo. Many thanks for joining us, Paolo.
Many thanks to you.
Now, in the next hour, we're going to be chatting about your career and hearing you play pieces by a variety of composers. I must say, though, that Abel does sound like quite an interesting character. He was a virtuoso player and a composer, even a concert promoter. And by all accounts, he was particularly interested in improvising, which I know is an area that you've been exploring recently. I mean, do you feel some kind of affinity with him, sort of 250 years on?
Well, I wish I was his student. I would like to have a couple of lessons with Mr. Abel. I, By the way, other people who had lessons with him were not unimportant musicians like Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart.
Oh, yes, him. I remember him. We're actually going to be talking and listening to some of the music that you've been improvising yourself a little later on, and also playing some more of Arbel's music. But first of all, let's hear a couple of pieces by English composers from the 18th century. This one's by a man called William Corkin. It's got a rather interesting name, The Punk's Delight, one of those wonderful dance tunes.
Yes, those fantastic sounds of the lyra viol, where they were experimenting so much in that time on the viol, using different tunings of the instrument and getting out these incredible sounds. I think there was this freedom of experimenting. It's so charming, so thrilling. I think we get dozens of different kind of tunings, and according to each tuning, in fact, dozens of different sounds that you can get of the viol.
And before that, a pavan by Tobias Hume, who I do like the sound of, because he was actually a soldier, wasn't he? I mean, I think some of his music, he says Captain Tobias Hume.
Yes, he writes somewhere in his perfection, the only feminine part of my is the viol. All the rest is a soldier. But still there is both of the parts in his music. It's very strong and also very imaginative and very poetic. Yeah, a very special figure.
And I think we hear you begin that piece with some pizzicato, which is another way of using the instrument that perhaps people won't be familiar with.
Well, the whole subject about pizzicato on the viol, it's extremely important to me because you have lots of quotations of treatises and of descriptions of how the sound of the viol on one side imitates the human voice, but on the other side imitates the plucked instruments, until the very extreme descriptions of imitation of bells. So you have this double soul in the viola da gamba, the soul of the voice and the soul of the percussive resonating sounds. So using the pizzicato, the plucking on the viol, it's like having one of those basic important sound models. And the sound of the viola da gamba pizzicato, well, I love it, so I use it as much as I can.
Thank you.
a pavan by the English early 17th century composer Captain Tobias Hume, and a piece by William Corkin, The Punk's Delight. So, Paolo, the viola da gamba is obviously a very versatile instrument. It can be played solo, as we heard, or part of a consort of viols, and of course it can also be used to reinforce a bass line, can't it, along with, say, a lute or harpsichord. What was it that drew you towards the instrument? I mean, were you a cellist when you started?
No, I never played the cello. I like the word you say about viol being versatile. And I think that it's thanks to a very versatile first years of musical career that I landed to the most versatile of the music instruments. Coming from the piano, then I played violin, but not classical violin. I played bluegrass violin, being a teenager, and electric guitar and acoustic guitar and folk guitar, singing. And then I landed on the double bass, jazz double bass, and then I was around 17. And so I was starting, in fact, a career as a jazz double bass player, but I met somebody who landed me a viola da gamba, and that was love at first sight. So there were a couple of years where I played both double bass and viola da gamba, and then I stayed with that. But all that experience of having played that many different instruments and having all those different sounds sounding and ringing in my head, well, I think that helped me a lot for knowing how rich the viola da gamba can be.
Well, we talked a little earlier about your interest in improvisation, which obviously connects to what you were saying. We're going to hear some of your own modern improvisations a little later, your own compositions. But being inventive and sort of putting your own personal stamp on a piece of old music with decorations or with divisions and so on, this is not a new art, is it? I mean, in fact, there are many pieces from the early repertoire which just, in a sense, give us chord patterns for which presumably musicians can do their own inventions.
It's not only an option. I mean, we do a lot of talking about historical performances, but there wouldn't be any authentic early music performance of early music repertoire of about many, many, many pieces. I would say that the big percent of pieces, maybe 80-90%, do really need the intervention of the improvising performer. And if there is not that, then we are very inauthentic. So we have to take the risk, and the thing about risking to be kind of out of style, because we are 21st century musicians and we don't really know how would an improvisation sound 300 years ago. Well, this is a little bit of an excuse, because if we speak a foreign language, we don't come out with different words. If I speak English, I don't come out with French words. And so if I'm into that idiom, then I will improvise in that idiom. I'm pretty sure.
We're going to hear a piece of music now. It's a chaconne en rondo, and it's by Marin Marais, but it's based on a series of chord sequences which I think travelled, you know, all around Europe. I mean, there was a sort of set ostinato pattern which was amazingly quite well known. I mean, I suppose people did travel, the musicians passed these things around, did they?
Absolutely, and those things also, they were used for dancing, you see. So there were dance patterns. And the important thing is that music in that age had a very basic social role. It's not just offering music to a paying audience which sits politely and listens to the musicians. They were doing things with it. They were, for instance, dancing. And this is something which is feeding vitality for music. That same vitality that I see actually lacking very much in today's classical music life. So I very much look forward to a future where there'll be again a role for musicians to play in the society. So that dancing, I wish sometimes that when I play concert, people would stand up and dance. And even if this would be very impolite.
This is then a piece by Marin Marais, who was the royal musician to Louis XIV, Chaconne en Rondo. Thank you. Chaconne en Rondeau by Marin Marais. Harpsichordist was Mitzi Meyerson, Thomas Boyson on theorbo, the percussionist Pedro Esteban, and on the viol da gamba, or bass viol, Paolo Pandolfo, who's my guest today. Paolo, do you enjoy playing with groups rather than solo?
I love that. There is the part of communication among the musicians and of the dialogues with the continuo. Particularly, I work still a lot with Thomas Boyson. There is complicity in the work together, and this is very exciting, very thrilling. And I'm sure it was at the time too. Every time that two, three musicians come together, there's something happening on all senses, human first.
Well, we're going to hear you all doing an improvisation around a canario, a kind of Spanish dance, isn't it?
Yes. There are many canarios, basically, by French composers. And canario, it comes from Canary Islands.
We used to hear so much about authenticity in early music, but we're now all a bit calmer about that sort of thing. So in a sense, we're hearing you straying a little for what we might say was historical performance.
Well, as I said, in order to be historical, one has to take the risk of being unhistorical. We have to take the risk and do this basic thing, which is improvising, and then see things happen. And what this is, I also see in real concerts, when the musician is improvising, the audience feels something completely different. There is a much stronger communication between the stage and the audience.
an aria of music from the folk or popular tradition there, performed by Paolo Pandolfo and an ensemble of harpsichord, percussion, guitar and theorbo. Paolo, we began the programme with a track from your CD of music by Carl Friedrich Abel, and we're going to hear some more from it now. All the pieces on the disc are from something called the Drexel manuscript. Tell me a little about that.
Well, we have to be very grateful to a figure very important to English culture, Thomas Gainsborough, the painter, who was a very close friend of Abel, and whose manuscript then ended up in this Drexel collection. So Abel wrote those pieces and gave them as present to Thomas Gainsborough. Abel himself did never write music for himself. He only used to perform without any score. He used to perform only improvising. But as an exchange of works of art, he had exchanged, Thomas Gainsborough was providing him pictures and he was providing him pieces of music. So that's where this Drexel manuscript collection comes from, basically.
And we're going to hear three movements now from Suite in D minor, Arpeggiata, Minuetto, and finally Allegro. Another track from the CD of music by Carl Friedrich Abel, the Drexel manuscript, performed by Paolo Pandolfo, who's joined us for today's programme. Abel performed a lot in London, of course, in his own concert rooms in the West End. Do you think audiences would have found that music difficult because it's not like listening to an ensemble playing popular tunes? It's music you have to think quite hard about.
Well, I don't think so. I think that Abel was in the right place at the right moment. He, coming from the Baroque culture of Germany, being a student of Johann Sebastian Bach, he practically escaped Europe where the wars were massacrating all the cultural contexts, and passing the Channel, arriving to London, he arrived in a place where he could only work only on his music and provide music for a completely different audience. They were not aristocrats, but they were high middle class rich people who had the right to enjoy music differently from the European courts. The old social background was very different. That's how it could take place, this revolution that Abel and Bach did, Bach's son, so Johann Christian, and they organized this Bach-Abel concerts. And it's the first series of paying concerts for normal people. This is a big, big revolution in music's history for Western world.
And London led the way, really. It's
absolutely.
Rather a nice feeling. What about when you do concerts yourself, obviously, these days, and you include a piece that similar to what we're going to hear now, in fact, one of your own pieces? You call it an improvisation, but have you, in fact, worked out something you usually do, or is there an element of surprise on the stage for you?
Well, now, the fact of including in programmes of early music some of my own compositions or of my own improvising pieces, which might be historical improvisation or modern improvising pieces, this is something that I'm experiencing in the last years, and the response of the audience is always extremely interested and enthusiastic. It's somehow very exciting to see that how this instrument, the viola da gamba, has a word to say in today's music and has tools to express our feelings and emotions of today's 21st century's people. This has been we found out this incredible, magnificent new sounds which had been forgotten, and we should now use them and provide with that vital force for the music of the future.
piece written and improvised by one of our most celebrated modern players of the viola da gamba, my guest today, Paolo Pandolfo, and it was called Keep Going. Paolo, with a name like that, you're obviously Italian by birth. You studied, though, in Basel, the famous Schola Cantorum, and I gather you teach there as well.
Yeah, I managed to stay.
It is a lovely place. It's a
lovely place, and it's a very exciting school where many things happen at once. One is involved in 200 projects in the same moment and speaks five languages within 5 minutes. It's a very exciting place, yes.
We're going to hear you play some Bach now, the opening of No. 6 of his solo cello suites. I always think there's a bit of confusion about what instrument he actually wrote these for. Was it a cello or was it a gamba?
Neither or. It was probably cello piccolo. So cello provided with a top E string, 5-stringed. All other theories now think of viola da spalla, still an instrument of the viola da braccio, which is the family of the violins, but a larger one. Not as large as a cello, but somewhere in between and still hold at the shoulder. What I did is transcribing all 6 suites for the viol, knowing that we were talking about a transcription and not an original manuscript by Bach. We didn't mean it to write it for the gamba. But I'm very convinced about the operation I did. I think that they sound wonderful, and there are many arguments to explain why I transcribed them. There are 6 new wonderful pieces in the viola da gamba repertoire, and I enjoy very much to play them. And maybe here the time is too short to say to give all the argumentation and explanation, but I suggest just to hear a bit of it, and because I think it's very exciting. And actually the best commentaries I get from cello players, even from very well-known cello players. So there's something good in it.
And this is the prelude from suite No. 6.
Thank you.
prelude from Bach's Suite No. 6, performed on the viola da gamba by Paolo Pandolfo. Well, time's running out, I'm afraid. And for our last piece, we thought we'd play you performing some Spanish music by Diego Ortiz. Now, he lived more than a century before Bach, didn't he? And I think he worked at the court of Philip II. Was the gamba then as popular in Spain as it was, say, with the French?
The gamba was very popular during the Charles V and Philip II. Of course, it was one of the basic instruments. And Ortiz, those works that he published, which are in fact improvising tutors, by the way. So many of those books are about this subject. And so those pieces by Ortiz are meant to be examples of improvisations, and what we are going to listen are not exactly the notes that Ortiz wrote, as I assume that a good student of Ortiz would have never played the notes that his master would have taught him, but would have learned the way how to improvise his own way through the music.
Many thanks for coming to chat to us today, Paolo. Really great to meet you.
Oh, thanks to you.
And we're going to end with a piece by Diego Ortiz, Passamezzo Moderno.
Passamezzo Moderno by Diego Ortiz, played there by Paolo Pandolfo, who was Lucy Skeeping's guest on the Early Music Show today. All the details of the music in the programme, by the way, are available on the Radio 3 website. Just go to bbc.co.uk/Radio 3 and follow the links to the Early Music Show.
In 1798, William Wordsworth and Samuel Taylor Coleridge left Somerset and set off together for Germany. In this week's Sunday feature, John Werthen travels to Göttingen, where Coleridge steeped himself in the German Romantic movement that would inform his future writing and his influence on those around him.
Can we talk more generally, Seamus, about why Coleridge went to Germany?
I think that he saw in Göttingen a chance of reliving the undergraduate career that he'd rather blown last time.
Coleridge in Göttingen.
Ah, danke schön.
Bitte schön.
Tonight's Sunday feature at 9:30... here on BBC Radio 3.
Back to this afternoon, just gone 2 o'clock, and time now for Radio 3 Requests with Chichi Nwanaku.
Where I'll begin with the solution to a musical mystery.
Thank you.
The Dream of Olwen by Charles Williams. It was taken from Where I Live, a 1947 film of mysterious mistaken identity. Daniel Adney was the pianist with the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Kenneth Olwen. I played it for Brenda Linnett, who'd remembered the title from many moons ago but couldn't track the piece down. Glad to have solved your musical riddle, Brenda, and I hope that brought back many happy memories. My next request comes from Mr. Kenneth Matthews in London for one of Mozart's most haunting violin sonatas, though Mr. Matthews leaves his reasons an enigma for us to ponder.
Thank you.